Senator Saltzman makes those author's amendments. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Very good. So at this time, if Ms. McQuaid would like to go through the bill first and just review it, and then perhaps we could have, like, if there are questions from the members, if that would possibly work best for the committee to just go through the entire bill first.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman. Dr. McQuaid.
Mr. Chair and members, the Section 1 is the purposes section for charter schools, and it includes student achievement, and also it lists six purposes that charter schools may have, and it's an or list, and this would make it an and list. Section 2 extends the advisory, reenacts the advisory council to the year 2015 and redefines the duties of the advisory council. Section 3 on page 2 defines application and affidavit. These are two terms that have been used throughout the charter school statute existence but are defined here. And then it goes on to clarify who can sponsor, makes clarifications of that the charitable organization be non-sectarian. And on page 3, makes the charitable organization have an ongoing fund balance of at least two million for at least four consecutive years, and requires that it be incorporated in the state of Minnesota. Paragraph C requires sponsors to apply to the commissioner and establishes criteria for evaluating a sponsor's ability to sponsor.
Senator Rummel.
Excuse me, Dr. McQuaid. I want to say Dr. Shelby. The commissioner must approve or disapprove an application within 60 business days. Is that a change from the past?
Dr. McQuaid.
This is line 3.25.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel, I think that the... that a sponsor did not formally have to be approved by the commissioner, and so I think this is new. This is all new language.
That's all new. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Hinn.
Mr. Chairman, can I also ask a question? I don't know if who should be the right respondent, but in this section, do current sponsors of current charter schools also need to go through this application approval process, or is this just intended to apply to new prospective sponsors?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, if you'll look in paragraph E on page 4, starting at line 15, this paragraph requires sponsors that authorized a charter school before August 1st of 2009 must apply to the commissioner, but gives them a 3-year window to do so. So they will have to go through this process, but it allows a certain time period for them to do so.
And Mr. Chairman and Dr. McQuaid, if a sponsor of a current charter school either elects not to apply or applies and isn't approved, what happens to the charter schools? Is there something in the section that deals with that? If those schools under that chartering agency are no longer have a chartering agency, what happens?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, if on line 417, if the sponsor fails to submit the application or is not approved, then they're not eligible to be a sponsor. And although it doesn't say it right there, the commissioner has in the past taken steps to end in the renewal of a contract, and this is probably the time period that it would come up for the sponsor, allows for a series of processes for a transfer of sponsors.
Proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, on page 4, paragraph D requires the sponsor to participate in department-approved training. Paragraph E is that reauthorization for existing sponsors. Paragraph F is a review of the sponsor's performance every 5 years. And paragraph G allows the commissioner to take corrective action against the sponsor for failing to do one of the three things listed on the bottom of page 4. Section 4 begins at the top of page 5, and it begins by eliminating the board approval of a charter school application because that authority was transferred to the sponsor. It requires that sponsors fill out a separate affidavit for each school that they authorize. This section in paragraph C also allows sponsors to prevent an opening of a charter school after it has been approved. Paragraph D defines the voting members of an ongoing board to be not related parties, and that they are legal guardians of children enrolled at the school and teachers at the school. Paragraph E is the training that board members are required to participate in, and requires that board members begin that training within 3 months of being seated and complete that training within 12 months of being seated. Otherwise, they would be ineligible to serve as a board member. Paragraph F defines the ongoing board to be at least 20% licensed teachers, and must include a charter school parent or legal guardian and an interested community member appointed by a resident school district. Paragraph H requires that the authorizing or renewal of a charter school not be contingent on a contract, lease, or purchase of services from the sponsor, and allows the commissioner to terminate a contract of the charter school if the commissioner determines that arrangement is illegal.
Sir Hinn.
Ms. Quaid, before going on here, on line 6.18, I guess, paragraph F, number 2, an interested community member appointed by the resident school district, that would be a non-elected board member appointed by the school district that happens to have the geography where the charter is? Is that how that is? Can you clarify that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hinn, that would be an appointed, not an elected member in the resident school district of the school district in which the charter school resides. And maybe Senator Saltzman wants to add to that.
Is it, Mr. Chairman? Is
Senator Hinn.
Senator Saltzman, I guess I'm curious about that, because if the charter school has nothing to do with the school district in the sense other than that just geographically located there, why would there be an appointed member rather than an elected member sort of representing the school district?
I'd be happy to talk about that. As we have talked about this topic, one of the things that has come up is there's been several different sort of arguments that I'm trying to address here. One of them is that there's been a lot of discussion about when charter schools are successful, how do we have carryover to our district schools? What kind of feedback is there? As we've talked about charter schools feeling part of a community or not part of a community, or people talking about oversight, or the issue that charter schools, we've had discussions about, I think in one of our first meetings we had some discussions, I can't remember what the topic was, I think it was about school boards of charter schools and what they're able to do compared to a district school, is that when you look at the school board of a school district, everyone in the community elects a school board. It's not just the parents at the school and the teachers. It is the entire community. Whether or not you have children who attend public schools or have attended public schools, and we talked about examples of where public schools sometimes can or can't do things based on the fact of what is the public response. And so in having that discussion, trying to figure out how can we create better communication, how can we create also cooperation, better understandings, and the fact that when you just said they're not part of that school, well, it's public dollars. And the people who are elected by that community, and probably if a charter school is in a community, it's probably likely that a lot of the students are from that you know, particular community, that it's probably the closest we can come to having some sort of member of the community who represents maybe the greater community. And the school board has been elected by the community. Now, there are people who are on school boards throughout the state who run on many different platforms. Some of the time it is that we need greater oversight. We need to have, senior citizens represented. We need to have, you know, parents who don't have children, you know, in our public schools represented. And so I see this as a way for us to strengthen the relationships between a community and also the charter schools that are in it. It's not that, you know, some of the ideas were, well, you know, should one of the school board members be appointed? Well, you see a Minneapolis or a St. Paul, and that would be very difficult because they have a number of charter schools and only so many elected officials. So the intent here is to build relationships. And the fact that I think, too, I've heard too often of where a charter school is able to find parents who are maybe like-minded or teachers who are like-minded and can create a charter school that's sort of in a corner of the community, and no one really knows it exists, that it's there. And having a community member, it doesn't limit who that community member is. Somebody asked me, well, you know, could it be another charter school parent? It could be. It could be a parent from a district school. It could be a retired educator. It could be a business person. And it doesn't limit the charter school board from having other community members as well. But I think that was my intent.
Mr. Senator Hand, followed by Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Saltzman, I appreciate the desire to build relationships. I think charter schools are interested in that, at least in the ones I've had experience with. But in my judgment, this would not do that. This would serve the exact opposite intention. They would look at this as, first of all, the person would be appointed by a school district that oftentimes is very hostile to the charter school, as we know. And so I think if you wanted to mandate an appointed person to a board, maybe it would be better to appoint a person who has a student in the charter school to the public school board. But I think that would raise some issues, and I frankly think this might raise some constitutional issues, whether you can appoint someone to a governing board like this or whether they have to be elected. I think I don't know. Maybe that's something for council to investigate. But the public school district does have a taxing authority that the charter school does not, which is the rationale for the entire public, I think, voting in a school board election. But the charter school is really only – the board is only governing the particular school. They don't have taxing authority. They don't have the ability to impact the community at large. They only have the ability to impact that school. And so I guess if your interest is to try to facilitate good relationships between charters and the public school district, I'm just thinking that this would do exactly the opposite. And so I'll just offer that at this point, and we'll continue the presentation of the bill. But I'm concerned about that just from my experience with charters.
Okay, Senator Hinton, that's duly noted. And if council, Mr. Corte, has an opinion to share at some point, please do. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, kind of taking off on Senator Hand's point. Well, I don't know that it would necessarily always be the case. If there is a hostility there, it would be a chance to appoint somebody who would just get on there and agitate. If that was, and you could see it happening. Sometimes it happens the charter school board might, in fact, appoint as well. But I'm not sure how you overcome that or if there's a different way of assuring that there's somebody, whether it's a representative of the district or that it has to be a resident of the school district that is appointed and not necessarily linked to the school district itself.
Okay.
I think it's worth the debate or discussion of it in terms of the makeup of the board.
Okay, I think there's groundwork laid for a potential amendment. If that's considered, let's continue the discussion. Mm-hmm. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, paragraph I at the bottom of page 6 defines and clarifies the steps for expansion to additional sites or additional grades, including a supplemental affidavit. Paragraph J at the bottom of page 7 requires a review and comment of that supplemental affidavit. Paragraph K prohibits a new charter school from opening in a newly consolidated district for at least 36 months. Paragraph L prohibits a charter school from opening within a 1 mile radius of a public school that is closed for at least 36 months. Paragraph M limits the maximum number of charter schools to 160 until July 1 of 2011. Section 5 is the conflict of interest section, and most of this language in paragraph A is clarifying. Paragraph C clarifies that disclosure be made for a profit entity as well as a nonprofit. Section 6 clarifies that the board, be it of an independent or special school district, may convert a school to a charter school. Section 7 makes the days from 90 days to 45 business days consistent with using business days throughout the act. It requires the charter contract to be submitted to the commissioner and defines what the contract must include. And then also included in that charter contract on at the top of page 10 is the plan for an
order
closing.
Senator Rummel.
Excuse me for interrupting again, Dr. McQuaid. This contract, these points that need to be in the contract, is this, I see some of it's new language, but we've had contracts with most of these elements in the past.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, yes, most of them. The new one would be requiring signed agreements from charter school board members to comply with all federal, state, and local laws governing organizational, programmatic, and financial requirements. Also, the criteria, processes, and procedures that the sponsor will use for ongoing oversight of operational, financial, and academic performance specifies the initial contract and contract for the renewal contract.
Mr. Chairman.
And then the orderly closing.
Sarah Hinn.
Mr. Chairman and Dr. McQuaid, just to that point on your number 5, line 9.18, signed agreements, are those agreements of a nature that would attach personal liability to individual board members for performance of these laws? In other words, is there an assumption of personal liability to conform to law here, that if it's not done, there would be some criminal or other sanction to individual board members?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, I'm not aware that that was the intention, but I believe that statement came from the department, if they would like to.
Maybe that's something you could, I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to understand what that is. I mean, I served on a public school board, and we were not compelled to sign any agreements that we would follow the law. And I think the only way that we would do that is if there was some expectation that if we didn't, we'd be prosecuted. And I guess I'm uncertain about what the intent is.
Ms. Brown, please state your name for the record and tell us the intent.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Morgan Brown with the Department of Education. This language was included to ensure that all board members understand in terms of the role of the board as a whole, in terms of its responsibilities for compliance with laws and regs. As I understand it, it would not necessarily extend any personal liability to them in terms of litigation in the future, or if at least in terms of the litigation. The board, just as charter school boards are currently, the individual members would be protected as long as they purchase and maintain liability insurance. The open question is if they fail to purchase and maintain liability insurance, which is addressed in another section, I believe, of this bill, is then they could be personally liable. But that's also true under current law, even without having them sign this document.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hahn, I'm wondering when and maybe people who are in charter schools, I'm wondering when we were elected to our school boards, we had to do some swearing in type formal thing. Do they do that in charter schools? Do they swear on whatever, take an oath of office like we did? Does anyone know?
There's audience indication that there is a swearing in, but
there is.
Mr. Brown, is there a swearing in ceremony on the oath of office or those board members?
Mr. Chairman, to my knowledge, there's nothing formal required in law. Some boards may choose to do that, and some boards may not, but there's nothing in law that requires them to take an oath of office.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, before...
Excuse me, Senator Rummel.
And that would be because they're not elected by the public. They're elected by their school.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rummel, it's actually because they're their boards, not only as charter schools, but their boards as nonprofit organizations, and so it's governed by nonprofit law.
Okay.
Charter school board members, though, are in fact elected by their community and must be, the whole board must be entirely elected by the third year of operation for the charter school.
By the school community.
By the school community, which includes all teachers and employees, as well as all parents or legal guardians of students.
Sarah Hinn.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brown. Please continue.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, Section 8 begins on page 10. It requires the audit report to go to the sponsor as well as the commissioner. Section 9 clarifies the statutes and rules that charter schools are exempt from and which ones apply. Section 10 goes is mostly clarifying language of which requirements federal, state, and local charter schools are required to meet. And it makes additional requirement that on line 18 that a charter school student must be released for religious instruction. And that would be consistent with public school.
Mr. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, are you interested in changing authorizer on 10.13 as you did it? A couple other places, bringing it back to sponsor?
On 10.13.
10.13.
So, Mr. Chair, yes, I would be very open to that amendment.
Senator Olson makes that motion to change the word authorizer at 10.13 to
sponsor.
All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Senator Olson. Please continue.
On page 12, the Mr. Chair, within the state and local and federal requirements makes charter schools comply with the entirety of sections of chapters 13 and 13D instead of just 13.32. This is the data privacy section of law. Page 12, line 15, requires charter schools offering online courses and programs to comply with the online learning section. Paragraph O requires that charter schools and charter school boards are subject to 181, which is the employment section. Section 11.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if back on section 10, I think we have another 11.12. I think you don't want to make that. I think you want to restore the stricken language.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, authorized there is used as a verb.
Mm-hmm, I know.
And I think the intent was to that the sponsor be the noun and the action be authorizing.
So Mr. Chairman, is the school board then the sponsor?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes.
Proceed.
Then, but if we're defining the role of the sponsor, then I think it should be sponsored rather than authorized. I mean, you can use, we have used the word authorize in what an action that a sponsor does, but when you're actually in the role of sponsor, I think we've used
this word that's authorizing. Mm-hmm.
It's the school board that's sponsoring also.
A school authorized by the school board.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, if that's the intent.
Is the school a charter school in this case or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes.
Well, I think it should be sponsored, but I'll think about it.
We'll think about that.
You think about it.
Okay. So on that point, Mr. Chair, on 415, on line 415, we use the word a sponsor, and then mm-hmm. we use the verb authorize. So it's consistent with a sponsor is a noun and the process is a verb. But I understand your question. Let's think about that.
Sarah Hinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. McQuay, I was reading something here, and you were proceeding with your review. Did you already cover Section 12?
A
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, no.
Okay, I'm sorry. What is it? I had a question on that section, so maybe.
Mr. Chair, I'll just go quickly then through Section 11, requires the commissioner to reduce a charter school's state aid if the board fails to correct a violation under this act. And Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, that was on 12.23, I think the intention was for section to read act, and that would be a my mistake.
So what do you want?
On 12.23, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I think the intention of the author was to require the commissioner to reduce state aid for a charter school board that fails to correct a violation under this act, and it should read act.
Okay. Okay, Senator Hand moves to delete section and insert act. Senator Zaltzman, that's friendly.
I agree with that.
All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Carried.
And Mr. Chair, section 12 begins to go into the admission requirements for charter schools and strikes lines 30-33, which does not allow charter schools to limit admissions based on geographic area. It requires, on page 13, requires charter schools to develop and publish a lottery process. And on line 16, prohibits charter schools from distributing goods or services of values to students.
Senator Hand.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Ms. McQuaid, or maybe Senator Saltzman, the part that was stricken on the bottom of page 12, 12.3-33, I guess I'm curious as to why, what's the rationale for doing that? I know of charter schools for which this provision was an important part of their fulfillment of their mission. And I guess I'm just wondering what happens if that gets stricken and you have a school that is dedicated to serving a particular community. Are they no longer permitted to do that then? Or what is the reason to do this, and what would be the result of that for schools that have limited admission to by that criteria?
Yes.
Chair Zaltzman.
To that question, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, you know, the fact that it is a congressional district is that it is so large, and I'll ask Ms. McQuay if she could help me with that as well, because it really was not resulting in anything being able to be done any differently, and that the intent of this is not to at all change the makeup of any school.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't have anything to add.
Continue. Senator Bynum.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, with regard to that, I don't personally think we need to put that in law in terms of spelling that out, and I would think that, in fact, our integration aid working group that starts next week that you're on, Senator Hand, that maybe that conversation would be something that we ought to talk about there.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonham, I appreciate, and maybe that is the case. I'm trying to recall, but charter schools, I mean, unlike a traditional public school district that has a defined boundary, charter schools do not. And so I think there are, as I recall, this was a provision that permitted a school to, in effect, offer educational programming to a particular community without running into some problems that might otherwise occur. And I'm not clear, I guess, on what exactly would happen or if this would be an impediment to other schools that were trying to do that. For example, and I'm maybe completely out of the ballpark here, but I met with some folks a week or so ago out in Eden Prairie that are thinking of starting another charter school out in Eden Prairie, an elementary school. And we have a fairly significant Somali population in the northeast quadrant of our city, and what they really wanted to do was create a charter school that would be focused essentially, not exclusively, on that population because of the achievement gap issues, and they felt that they had an idea of how they could address that, and they wanted to make sure they offered this program. And if we take that language out, then it might not be permissible for them to do that, because then they would not be able to target their program to a particular need. And that's what I'm concerned about. If that's the intent of this or not, I don't know, but I'm concerned that that's what it would do.
So if you look at this...
Senator Saltzman?
Yes. To that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, if you look at what this is under, is that a charter school may limit admission to residents, and it goes to this congressional district, and our congressional districts are so large. I think that if this was... if you took out the phrase congressional district and it was a city, municipality, a school district, it would have a whole different intent to it. But our congressional districts are so large that it isn't really applicable. We have really tried to have a number of conversations about integration, diversity within this group, and really could not come to any sort of consensus on how we address those issues, because we do have schools that are becoming very culture specific. We have schools that are primarily white schools. We have schools that tend to work with children who are Latinos, and nothing is restricting that now. And we had that discussion, should we encourage greater diversity? And as of this time, we really have not made any sort of conclusion on that, and Senator Bonoff is working on the integration aid, which I think is probably where that discussion needs to be taken place. This really doesn't do anything in terms of the numbers, and so I guess that's why I'm it hasn't really changed where schools are limiting enrollment.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Saltzman, I guess there may be some misunderstanding of that. If it really doesn't matter, then I don't know why we would strike it. If there hasn't been any problems, then why would we strike the language? I guess I'm just concerned that if there are schools that are trying to target an achievement issue that happens to be focused in a particular community and there is an ethnicity or some other factor, that they might not be permitted to do that if this exception were not in the law, is my point. If we say you can't limit enrollment to that community, for example,
Senator,
then if you're trying to do that, then...
Senator Olson, followed by Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, I'm just trying to extrapolate what your illustration is. It says just non-Caucasian, and even in, that would be the third congressional district, if you had add up all of that in a congressional district, you might have to get awfully compact in this little part of Eden Prairie to exceed what that percentage might be. And then how restrictive are you? I'm not sure it's a interesting hurdle to cross, but if you are targeting that population, they're probably going to be the ones that are going to apply for it and are in fact recruited for it. And I'm not sure why you would necessarily have a problem of drawing the people that it isn't intended for.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I guess I'm not sure if maybe there's some confusion here, but the way that I have understood this is that it gives the current law gives the charter school permission to limit admission to a geographical area that otherwise it would not be permitted to do. That's what this... It says a charter school may limit admissions to pupils within an age group, pupils who are eligible, and number three, residents who are in a geographical area. So now we're saying they may not limit enrollment to residents in a geographical area that may be a specific community or ethnic oriented or whatever it might be. They cannot do that. That's my concern.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, could you get the congressional district business out of there and just say residents of a specific geographic area as long as the school reflects the racial and ethnic diversity of the specific area? Is that kind of what you're getting at? And leave that, whatever that compounding is of the non-Caucasian
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I don't know that the congressional district really has anything to do with it. The way I understood and the reason why this was originally in the law was to permit a community school to exist that would be focused on the needs of that community, even if it was ethnically isolated, quote unquote. And so using the congressional district was just one way to use anything you want, I suppose. But the point is, if we don't want that to occur, then this would certainly prevent that. And I think there are schools that would immediately run afoul of this if it were changed, and there would be other schools that prospectively wouldn't be able to come into being.
Senator Bonoff and Scheid, I know you each have questions, but Deputy Commissioner Brown, if you have some additional insight to share on this point.
Mr. Chairman, Assistant Commissioner Brown, I don't need the promotion, but thank you. let me try to clarify on this. The language, the provision deleting this language was not part of the department's original bill. It was something added by the House to their bill that's moving through the process over there. So I'll try to explain both what the intent was and why I think the House decided to delete this provision. The original intent, as I understand it, was to allow a charter school to limit admission in such a way that it could serve a underserved population within a particular neighborhood and community, and rather than existing under the open enrollment law where anyone could come in for admission through the lottery process. And the way the language, and I don't know that I can do a great job of technically explaining language, but the intent was to make sure that if they chose to do it, it wasn't being done in such a way that the charter school would serve primarily Caucasian students. Or only Caucasian students. The intent was, if you want to serve a neighborhood with a high population of students of color and make sure that you didn't have a number of Caucasian students from, let's say, the suburbs, if you're trying to serve a community within Minneapolis coming in and taking spots when you were really trying to serve students within that particular community. The department does know of one charter school that does utilize this provision, Hiawatha Leadership Academy in southwest Minneapolis, and I believe they have someone here if you want to hear directly from them about why they chose to utilize this provision. My understanding of the reason, and I'm trying to be careful here, since this wasn't our language, the reason the House decided to delete it is that there was some concerns about, because this allows you to limit the area based on some criteria that involve race and ethnicity, whether this would raise some concerns, as you'll probably be discussing about in your integration working group, in light of the recent Supreme Court decisions that relate to using race and ethnicity to determine enrollment in a particular school. And we have not had a chance to look into the legal questions about this and how the Supreme Court decisions may interplay with this, but I think that was part of the concern coming forward about whether this might be challenged legally in the future.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Mr. Brown, exactly. That's the point I was trying to get, maybe pretty inadequately here. But for a school like Hiawatha Leadership Academy, and I think the school that is thinking of starting in Eden Prairie, if this were adopted, if this language were eliminated, I think Hiawatha would immediately have a problem. And then they would have to adjust their enrollment to comply with the fact that they no longer could do what they've been doing in terms of recruiting students. And I think that would have a very detrimental effect on the ongoing future of that particular charter school and maybe others, I don't know. And so I really wonder if there's not any particular problem that mandates the removal of this language, I think we really ought to be careful about doing it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, I should probably let the individual school respond to what its particular circumstances might be, but my understanding would be that if this provision were removed for any school that's currently utilizing it, it wouldn't affect their enrollment in terms of students, obviously, that are already enrolled there. They certainly would be protected, but it would affect, and of course, Hiawatha Leadership Academy is a relatively new charter school, so it's expanding by a grade each year. But for any new students that were coming in, they would essentially have to have an open application and lottery process if there were more students enrolling than they had seats available for any new enrollees.
So, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I think perhaps my question's answered. It seemed to me that what still, in the case of the Eden Prairie example, they would be marketing. They still had the choice to market a certain population, and there's nothing saying that that's not, I mean, that's who they're going after. That's who would apply. Would the concern be you might have people from Anoka applying, and so then so many people would come, it would no longer be a community school, and so you'd need a lottery? I mean, do we really think that deleting this would significantly change the makeup? And in the case of the Hiawatha, are we concerned that then because this school is raising, you know, expectations and has so much success that there would be students now from all over the metro wanting to go there, and therefore the people in that local area. Because we aren't saying, we aren't limiting it to, it has nothing to do with ethnicity. We're limiting it to a geographic area and using as our standard to limit the ethnicity in the area. So we're only limiting the geographic area.
Sarah Saltzman.
And on those points, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bonoff, you know, I guess that when I saw the House had taken this out, and based on our discussions, that there didn't seem to be consensus on how we should address schools that choose to not be diverse or schools that just happen to be in certain areas. We did hear from the school in Bloomington concerns about, you know, here was a school that was trying to really integrate, and then a school came in and pulled many of those white students out. So it seemed to me that we're limiting enrollment. I felt comfortable with that. I really am not, I am open to the discussion, but I think at the same time, there is the issue that we've talked about is diversity and integration. And when we're starting to limit admission, and as you mentioned, it's based on race and ethnic diversity, we really didn't have a consensus on how we felt about that. So I just share that.
Sarah Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, it's interesting to hear white people complain about being left out. not that Senator Saltzman is doing it, just kind of generally. I wondered about the history of this paragraph and whether or not this was put in place to add protection for the schools that were, I guess you could say, racially isolated, and do they maybe need this to continue to do that? I mean, we can talk about whether or not we ought to have diversity, and I get torn in all kinds of directions about this topic, but I also understand the need of some communities as we are growing and changing in this state, that there may be a good reason for having this. And I just wonder about the history. If we adopted this paragraph 3 in the very beginning of the law, and was it anticipating this very situation?
Senator Saltzman.
And at that point, Senator Scheid, I believe that in some of the discussion about this, that was this bill, was it written when there were different integration or segregation rules in place? And so we needed to be able to allow for this, because now we talk about schools that could be perceived as segregated. And yet we heard repeatedly at this table from people who said, if it's a parent's choice, then it's okay. That it's not, that we don't, that there are different rules in place regarding that. And that we try to then integrate schools that are racially isolated, but we don't force children to go to certain schools. So that could be part of it. Again, it is not intended to affect any current practices.
But,
Sarah Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, and I don't want to butt in because I'm not on the subcommittee.
We welcome your input.
But, I mean, it may not be the intent, but would it be the effect if you say that any future enrollment is going to not have this, this escape from that requirement? I mean, in other words, they'll have to change the nature of the school. I think I heard you say that. That they would then have to open up the enrollment by lottery or however.
Senator Saltzman.
If I could perhaps, Mr. Chair, perhaps how this might work, it is my understanding, is that if a suburban school district wanted to create a school for, say, Somali children who are moving, or Latino children, and that they could then, it's my understanding, if this was kept in place, that they could then limit enrollment, that they could, instead of going through a lottery, could then draw Latino children to that school prior to having other children come. And that is probably a discussion that maybe this committee was really wondering, is that what we want to encourage when we want greater diversity, when you have school districts in the suburbs that are not very diverse, are we creating segregated schools? I'm just, you know, just kind of perhaps sort of thinking out loud.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, it's a fascinating conversation. I only represent very diverse school districts. So I'm thinking very specifically of the community of Brooklyn Center, which you may recall in the Star Tribune, and I know that I'm sure that Senator Olson saw that article. I think 49% of the community is non-white, non-Caucasian. And so they are a perfect example. And there is the language in the current law, but it's stricken on the last lines, 32 and 33, and as long as the school reflects the racial and ethnic diversity of the specific area. And that's a pretty important part of that whole paragraph, I think. So I'd encourage you not to toss this out just yet. I mean, you may be right, and that may be where we should go, but I would encourage you to keep that.
Well, I'm perfectly fine because if the House has taken it out and if this bill does move forward to conference committee and we don't have it in, there'll be a continued discussion about it.
Yeah.
But the intent was not to undermine anything at all, but was to reflect the fact that I did not feel that we really reached or felt very comfortable having policies that were based on race and also,
Senator Saltzman, are you comfortable with us entertaining an amendment at this point?
I'm perfectly fine with that, Mr. Chair. Would like to move that. That would be fine.
Senator Hand?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I think, and I appreciate Senator Saltzman and the discussion, and I think you're right. There are issues here that need to be aired perhaps a little bit more fully, and maybe we'll have that chance in the immigration discussion too. But I'd like to move that we delete lines 12.3 to 12.33 from the bill, which would, in a sense, restore the law as it is. Is that correct?
If I just move to delete that. Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, would the intention be to reinstate on page 12, lines 29 to 33, reinstate the stricken language?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Ms. McQuay, my guess is if this is a bill and we delete lines 12.3 to 12.33, then the current language isn't affected at all. And so it would be just what it is currently. Is that correct?
Usually we do reinstate the stricken language.
Reinstate. Then I'll make a motion to reinstate the stricken language, starting with the or on line 12.29 and down to 12.33.
On that motion, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, as reflecting on this whole discussion and thinking about your illustration once again, I wish we would come to the time and maybe allow the fact that you're targeting an audience that has a substantial achievement gap. It would be nice to allow them to restrict the admission to ones who have that learning difficulty so that you can address that learning needs, never mind what color their skin is, because there's some from all of them that do, and it isn't singling it out as that would, and I think that would do it. You're focusing on what you're trying to achieve. I think that's better for marketing. I think it's better all the way around for us to start thinking that way instead of classifying people of certain colors or ethnicity as automatically being in need of what you're talking about.
Further discussion on Senator Hand's amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I need to amend my motion by also deleting the or that's been added on line 12.27. But also to Senator Olson's comment, I agree with you. I think that's well stated, and maybe that's something that we can work on in the interim to find ways to put this that will achieve that goal.
Between committees.
Senator Saltzman, any further comment before we vote? If not, those in favor of Senator Hand's amendment as amended indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Please proceed with the
Mr.
discussion.
Chair and committee. On page 13, section 13 includes the whistleblower language in the charter school section of law. And at the top of page 14, paragraph B requires that persons holding administrative supervisory or instructional leadership duties hold a valid administrator's license and exempts charter schools with less than 350 enrolled students from this requirement, and then there's rulemaking allowed on the last in section 24 of this bill. Section 14 clarifies what goes in the annual report that charter schools must publish and board of directors must approve.
And on that point, Mr.
Chair, Senator Saltzman,
perhaps a question to Dr. McQuay on line 14-15. Should that be student attrition instead of student arbitration?
I was wondering about that.
I just wanted to check. I'd like
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman. Yes.
That was, I did not catch that, Mr. Chair. I'd like to, if I might, move that on line 1415, the word arbitration be changed to attrition.
On that motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Saltzman, do you know if these requirements for the publishing of the annual report are more or less stringent? I think we just had a reduction, a mandate reduction for the traditional schools. I'm just wondering if this is more onerous than what we have for the traditional schools. Has anybody done a comparison?
Sir,
that is a good question, Senator Rummel. I do know that we have noted that can distributed by publication, mail, or electronic means, which would allow them that it does not need to be. I think some of the issues we've had with our district schools is related to having to post them in newspapers.
That's not required.
And this is not required. So this is publishing a report, but that it could be electronic and also posted on the school's website.
Sir Rummel.
I guess I wasn't referring to that part. I was referring to what the content of the annual report.
Senator Rummel, I would say that probably some of our public schools have to report other kinds of things as well. But I think also one of the things that we've talked about in this committee is how do we learn things from charter schools? And so we've talked about the innovative practices and implementation and future plans, and that's been one of the issues that has come up repeatedly in this committee from day one, was how are we learning from charter schools? What's working? What are some of the backgrounds? So this is a way for us to be able to have some of that information, as well as I think with our district schools have many other things to report as well, and have to post them in different places, in terms of board minutes and meetings and all those kind of things that make it much more public. So this is a way for us to have a yearly update from charter schools on some of the best practices that we've wanting to have somewhere documented a little bit more than they are right now.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Scheidt.
Mr. Chairman, if it's just my comment, because the bill that I introduced had a section, it expanded it and talks about what's included in the reports, and I think that's an important part of accountability that we're looking for. I didn't analyze each little item that you were requiring in the report. I think it's a little bit different, but mm-hmm. I think that it speaks to accountability that we're looking for here.
Thank you.
Okay, Dr. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 15 is the review and comment, and the changes here require that the sponsor, not MDE, evaluate the school, and then in turn MDE reviews the sponsor's evaluation of the school, and requires that the department do this each time the sponsor submits an application for approval and each time the sponsor undergoes the five-year review. And also in this section is the allowable fees that charter schools must pay to sponsors, and outlines that here. It is a phased-in fee, assuming that the charter schools' sponsors won't assume all the authority until 3 years out, so it is a gradual increase in the fee. Section 16 is
Senator Olson.
Just a clarifying question. Is the basic formula allowance for that year the amount for one student?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes.
So that by definition, it's not the whole caboodle, it's one student.
Mr. Chair, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And then paragraph D under that same section does not allow the department to assess fees to the charter schools that they sponsor, and I believe they sponsor currently 10 charter schools. Section 16 is the provision governing lease space, and now requires department approval for the lease agreement. Paragraph B allows the charter school to form a separate affiliated nonprofit building corporation, and requires that building corporation to elect board members and file a supplemental affidavit, and also includes in this section the information that must be included in that supplemental affidavit. And Mr. Chair and members, on the top of page 16, it prohibits charter schools from organizing a nonprofit building corporation until the sponsor files the supplementary affidavit and the commissioner approves it. Section 17 defines the time period for the leave of notice that a teacher must give to its district for leaving to teach in a charter school. Section 18 makes just some clarifying changes on the term authorizing. Section 19 makes some clarification on the non-renewal of a contract. So paragraph A deals with the non-renewal of a contract and how a contract can be terminated. Paragraph C deals with the mutually agreed upon termination of a contract by the sponsor and charter school board of directors.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Hinn.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. McQuaid, going back, I guess, to section 17, I'm looking at that last paragraph. I'm not sure that is reading as it's intended. It says during a leave, teacher may continue to aggregate benefits and credits to the teacher's retirement association account, chapters 350. Is that how it's supposed just to be that? Is that it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, I had cut this one on one other version, and I forgot to add this in. I think the best place to insert it would be on page 16, line 25, before chapters, insert according to. Okay.
Senator Hand makes that motion. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
And Mr. Chairman and Ms. McQuaid, just going back to that, the language that's been stricken, what's the effect of that?
In section 16.
In section 17, the stricken language, where we have had in the law that by paying both the employer and employee contributions, I guess, are we saying that the participation in the retirement account occurs even though no one is contributing to it? Is that
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, and I think Mr. Piccolo can describe this a little bit better. I know he's explained it to me, okay. But I think that it is the charter school's responsibility to pay into the account, and this would just make that clarification.
Okay, Mr. Piccolo, please state your name for the record.
Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, the language is stricken because the charter school, in two sections later, I believe it is, in law is required to, charter schools are required to participate in TRA, and this provision says that when the teacher's on leave, the teacher must pay both the employer and the employee part. When they're in the charter school, the employer is the charter school, and they are paying the employer part. So we're just clarifying that it is the employer, in this case, the charter school, that has to pay the employer part.
I got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. Please proceed, Dr. McQuaid.
Mr. Chair and members, continuing on with the termination of a contract, which is mutually agreed upon, if that is the case, on page 18, line 7, is that the transfer of a sponsor, as Senator Hand had mentioned earlier, it requires the commissioner to approve a transfer of a sponsor and then first determine whether the charter school and the new prospective sponsor can effectively resolve the circumstances that led it to terminate the contract. And Mr. Chair and members, in paragraph D allows the commissioner to terminate a contract for the for sustained failure to meet pupil performance contained in the contract fiscal mismanagement, financial mismanagement, or failure to meet generally accepted standards of financial management, repeated violations of the law, or other good cause shown. Section 20 clarifies definitions for related party, affiliate, close relative person, and control. That's deleted in a later section. Section 21 clarifies tort liability and insurance documents and requires the charter school board to submit the insurance policy to the sponsor and commissioner before starting operations, and then also requires them to submit changes in insurance carrier policy to the sponsor and commissioner. Section 22, building lease aid, includes a provision for a calculation for separate charter schools without a separate affiliated nonprofit building corporation, and then a section paragraph C for charter schools with a separate affiliated nonprofit building corporation. Section 23 is the payments of aids to charter schools. Currently, charter schools are paid with an upfront 10% amount of their payment for the entire fiscal year, and then in equal payments after that, and this would change it to be 24 equal payments. And paragraph C on page 21 allows the commissioner to withhold state aid if the charter school fails to comply with the commissioner's directive to return federal or state funds. Paragraph D requires that allows the commissioner to withhold state aid if the charter school fails to pay a school district, intermediate school district, or education cooperative or state after receiving an undisputed invoice. Section 24 is the rulemaking for licensure rules for administrative supervisory or instructional leadership staffing positions at the charter schools, and this was the rulemaking that I mentioned earlier. And the repealer is subdivisions 19, which is the authority of a charter school to raise working capital. And this law this subdivision is obsolete. And subdivision 26 is the charter school's ability to disseminate information. And that's repealed here.
Thank you, Dr. McQuay. Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chairman, before we get too far down here, maybe if Mr. Piccolo, or I have a question on section 23 at the bottom of page 20, the stricken language regarding the first year aid payments, and I just would like some comment from the charter school perspective, just knowing the financial challenges that charter schools face in their first year of operation, and how does this work, and maybe what's the reason for the change? I guess what we're saying is that instead of having an upfront amount and then payments spaced out, we'll do away with that upfront amount. Could you comment a little bit on that?
Ms. Pickle.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn. This provision is from the department. In looking at it, we really don't have any major concern about this because basically it evens out the cash, a little more for the cash flow for schools, and it only affects the first year of the school. And all schools have federal startup funds, so that helps cushion that cash flow. But basically, right now I think they get 10% of their funds for the year in the first payment, and this just puts them on the same cash flow basis as all other schools.
Thank you. Members, we may have a couple of amendments. I'm going to suggest that for 2 minutes we take a seventh inning stretch, and then we'll return and consider amendments. And if anyone in the audience would like to address those amendments or anything else, there will be that chance. So we'll return in 2 minutes.
I've been tired. listening to this one.
Okay.
That's not.
Can you tune in the other one too, or not?
Yeah, I've got for each of my hearing aids, but if there's, I don't know if I sometimes this far away, I might not pick up 123, but I've got 123, 112, 107, 50.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah. Some voices I can't pick up. For some reason, it just doesn't come off very strong through the mic. I get everything. In fact, I can even pick up side conversations if people are picking up at the right.
Thanks for
No one.
There's one little one that I didn't do earlier, but just to
not more than 40.
This obvious symbol.
Okay. When did you measure?
Measuring.
It was ordered to be measured.
It had been measured out, but this just got left in.
Okay.
So I'll just need to take that out.
You knew I was going to get that one.
Pick on you.
Oh, yes. Okay.
By what time?